There is no 13, right?
Correct.
There's a 14, and that's the one we pulled off the agenda, I mean, off the consent calendar. Yes. Mr. Thomas?
Yes, this is pulled off the consent calendar, and Matt Kaling is here to answer board questions, and I understand you have at least one speaker card for this item.
Yes, I do.
How do we want to do this? We want to go through just a real quick formal presentation, or we want to jump right ahead? I've got something that's rather brief here.
What would the board like to do? Doctor?
Yeah.
We have
just had a couple of questions.
Okay. Well, why don't you entertain questions?
Okay.
Since we...
Well, maybe we have the speakers first.
Okay.
Since they pulled the item?
And they may allude to some of the questions.
I actually have a question that I can ask before the speaker.
Sure.
In the response to comments, it says that the irrigation discharge is applied in an area without public access and is not subject to Title 22 reclamation or NPDES requirements. On the Title 22 requirements, if the recycled water is used on site and there's no public access, then it's exempt from the recycling requirements. And looking at the map, I wasn't sure if this property that they're irrigating is on site or it's adjacent property that they own. And I'm not really sure what the definition on site is.
Yeah, we can bring this up here. It's property that is somewhat adjacent to the wastewater treatment facility, and it is owned by the wastewater treatment facility company, California Utility Services. And let me just bring this up a little bit bigger so we can look at it. It's just the pointer here. Wastewater treatment plant is here, and the disposal area is separated from the treatment plant by the Salinas River. And so the disposal area is within this kind of dotted red line area.
And this is all non-crop irrigation?
Yeah, the area where they're irrigating is non-crop. There are agricultural fields up here, obviously, that are adjacent, and there's probably anywhere from, I'd say 30 to 100 feet setback from where they're actually spray irrigating to where the agricultural fields are. Access to this area is via kind of an ag service road with a gate down into here.
Are there any municipal supply wells in the area?
Not that I know of. The ones that I am aware of are down in this direction, Reservation Road. There's probably some ag wells up in this area.
Okay, thanks.
That's this one here. I forget what this is. This goes to Spreckles. This is Highway 68. Basically, if you head out of town going south here on 68, you'll run right into this. Here, we can look over here. We're right here, and this is the intersection you're looking at, 68.
Okay. Susan, and pronounce me for butchering your last name. Is it Bacigalupi?
Bacigalupi.
Bacigalupi.
I am Susan Bacigalupi. Thank you for letting me speak today. I was on the list to be notified about this hearing, and inadvertently, apparently, it slipped through the cracks, so I found out about it from a neighbor. So I'm not very well prepared, but in reference to the access, the non-public access, it may be private property, but it has been accessed by a lot of people. It's right down there. The end of this new property they have for spray fields is right down there by the Davis Road Bridge, and I use the word bridge loosely. There are geocaches stashed there. Hikers use it. There's a hill there where hikers go over and so on and so forth, and I have witnessed people on that property. Mm. There may be a gate on this eastern end of it, but I don't believe that there's anything to prevent anyone from going into that area from the more westerly end of it. Anyway, I originally got involved in this project from a land use question, and I want to be very clear that I'm not here today because of a land use. I'm here about a concern about issuing a permit to California Utility Service. I was assigned by the land use group to investigate the sewer facility. I've learned a lot about it, and there hasn't been very much about it that I've been very pleased with. I will say that the new permit that's under question today is immensely improved from the previous permit in 1995. But I still have questions about it. For instance, the reporting procedures of this company historically have been very, very poor. I spent better than a day in your facility down in Slo City going through all the records and lack of records and the inaccuracies in them and the missing areas and so on and so forth. And for instance, in 1987, when California Utilities Service took this over, they reported a flow of 225 gallons per day, 1,000 gallons per day. In 1994, in CSU's annual report, they reported that flow to be 185,000 gallons per day. And here in 2007, in the new permit where it's referenced, we're talking about 214,000 gallons per day, which is down roughly 11,000 since 94, which was down 40,000 from 86, and yet the area served has increased by roughly 10%. I presented a declaration to the Board of Supervisors here in the county documenting all of this. I could go on and on, but there's some sort of discrepancy here. In 2007, we're at a lower rate than in 1987. That cannot be possible. With what's going on. The spray field is a big issue, and the land to increase the size of the spray field has been obtained, I guess you would say, since this was brought up with the county. But I don't know that the spray field actually is in working condition. My point is there's so many ifs about this and so much history of things not being implemented, such as 1987, when a consulting firm was hired, Cregan and D'Angelo, they had many things that were supposed to be implemented. There is no documentation that they ever were. In your new permit, for instance, you're saying GPS coordinates on spray fields. Why isn't that done now? That is not real tough stuff. So, whereas I understand, and I had a great conversation with Mr. Keeling, who I think did a heck of a job of preparing this new permit, I have grave misgivings about the number of staff, basically, both county and with your board, that can put some teeth into it and see to it that it is happening and happening correctly. Because in the past, it has not. Your own Scott Phillips, Mr. Keeling's predecessor, wrote Mr. Biggs a letter, and I'm just kind of paraphrasing this because I just got this information, that he was very concerned about reporting irregularities. Solid waste disposal at the municipal regional waste district. I've spent hours talking to those people. I don't have the documentation with me. They're concerned. That what they are telling me is that the amount of solid waste that is being disposed is the same as the Carmel sewer plant that has a permit for 5 million gallons per day. I'm sorry, 3 million. I'm sorry, I think I'm inaccurate on that. It's 3 million versus the permitted current permit of 300,000 for California Utilities. They gave me a lot of reasons for this, and I don't like the reasons I was given. They're just historically, this is a bad operation. A good sewer plant, an excellent sewer plant, but a bad operation. There are no accurate maps of any of this. In your own new permit here, you talk about the end of the spray field, and I talked to Matt about this, and I think this is just a clerical error, but it speaks to what's been going on with this, that the end of the sewer plant is 4 miles from Davis Road, then it's 2 miles from Davis Road in another section, and the plain fact of the matter, it's pretty close to Davis Road. I don't know the exact, but we should know the exact. The stuff that Scott Phillips brought up, that the reporting is not necessarily what we want and when we wanted it, all of these things I have concern. I don't have concern with how good the plant is. What I have concern is how it's operated. And I think just flatly implementing a new permit and giving the go-ahead, unless something is done to inspect it regularly, to make sure that there's teeth in the violations kind of area, I think would just be doing a disservice to the people of this county. who are concerned, which is why, for instance, I believe the sewer operator was able to get an inflow meter put on, which they didn't have for years, and meters that were there, and I've got documentation for all of this, historically didn't operate. Scott Phillips, on one inspection, all your lab equipment was covered with dust and stuffed off in a corner and had obviously not been used in years. I do understand there's a new plant operator, and he comes very highly recommended. He has a very good reputation in the field. But the overall operation is where my concern is, and I think, if you pardon the expression, rubber stamping a permit without getting really serious about it, I don't think that I can feel comfortable that this will be operated the way it should be. I thank you for your time.
Okay, thank you. Mr. Keelan, when you've reviewed the file on this permit, did you see anything in it, permit violation-wise that, you know, raised any red flags in terms of reporting or monitoring or paperwork?
Not more recently, and quite honestly, going back through our files, I noted a marked improvement over the last 3 years since Edward Alexander, the new treatment operator, took over, you know, chief operations of the plant. The monitoring reports we're getting now are more consistent and complete, and, you know, I regularly have conversations with him, whether he's contacting me about an issue or I talk to him if I have a question. The communications there, I think the reports we're getting are coming in. It's accurate. As far as the lab issue that she brought up, I mean, currently all but the, I think, pH, dissolved oxygen, and settleable solids analyses for the plant are being collected and analyzed by a third-party laboratory. And they have a very small lab facility. And there is no requirement that, you know, they can't run all their own samples as long as they're accredited, but they've chosen to do them all at a third-party lab just as a kind of a credibility issue.
With what frequency do they have to submit monitoring results?
Well, in the proposed order, I've actually reduced it to quarterly reporting from a monthly reporting.
Okay.
Quite honestly, a lot of the reports that we get from waste discharge requirement facilities, it's redundant, and it's kind of difficult on a staff level to keep up with a lot of it. When I've got 60 reports that come in every month, if I can look at one quarterly report that has, you know, 3 months worth of data, I can do that in about the same amount of time I can look at it.
Well, over the past 12 months, did they submit each of their monthly reports?
Yeah, they have, and they've actually submitted their annual reports that historically I can't find them in the files, whether a lot of them were issued or not. It's I don't know, they may have been misplaced in our files as well, but the consistency and the quality is now in place.
What about the issue? It sounds like there may not officially be public access, but there is de facto public access.
Yeah, I wasn't aware of the portion down downstream along the Salinas River. The last time I was there 6-7 months ago and went down to the end of the irrigation areas, and it was a heavily wooded, brushed area, and the only access that I could see was some of these agricultural service roads. So, and I think, if I'm not mistaken, I also added a requirement in there for signage along that area, and I believe they already have some signs. Yeah, just to codify that in our requirements, so that if there is anybody that's out there, that they are going to be notified that it's treated domestic wastewater that's being disposed of in that area.
You know, part of the difficulty from the board's perspective is that with WDRs, we rarely see them.
Yeah.
You know, they may get updated 10 years, 15 years, and so there's no mechanism like with NPDES permits whereby they have to come back for board review. So, you know, this one's 10 years old. Who knows how long it'll be before the board looks at this again and knows that, you know, staff has been able to really watch this carefully. I appreciate your time constraints and having a bunch of these to look at. I don't know. How does the board?
I do agree with that. I think perhaps we should have a time limit on the WDR permits, because I do have a running list of permits that they really need to be updated. They've just been out there too long.
Right. And, of course, you can update them, I believe, when you want, correct?
Yeah.
Staff can.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so you're free to do that. But the board doesn't well, then that would require or allow for the board to then review the reissuance of it at that point. Dr. Press and
well,
Dr. Hunter?
Well, the board can ask staff, can direct staff to come back after the new permit has been issued and quarterly report has been received. And I understand you have lots of permits, but you don't have a lot of permits. You may be reviewing 60 at a time, but you don't have 60 people flagging problems or potential problems or historical problems, right? So this could be a subset, a small subset of a larger set of facilities that are operating or have historically operated just fine. So I don't see why we can't ask staff to pay a little closer attention to this in the near future and then report back to us. Because my expectation is that you wouldn't have to be doing that for all 60 that that currently are live on your desk.
Yeah, and you know, I think in CWIC, so we go back to the enforcement report earlier, that's enabling us to do that, I think, in a more complete fashion, because we now have staff in our office that takes each of these reports and picks through it with a fine-tooth comb, comparing it to the requirements. The monitoring requirements, one, and the prohibitions and the effluent limitations. And anything that's out of the ordinary, they flag it. We get notified. It goes into the violation report, and we have to respond to it.
Right.
Before it ends up.
And I just want to add also that what's most helpful to us, if a member of the public has a problem with a particular facility, is to have something that we can document or check on and act upon. As the speaker said, you don't have problems with the plan. We're here to approve this particular permit. So it has been the case in the past that the public have alerted us to violations that we didn't know, and we acted on them, and they resulted in big fines and enforcement actions. That does happen with people off the street, so to speak. So, however, we need more specificity, specific actions for us to act upon. We can't act upon a general sense that a facility is maybe not well run when in recent months we have compliance and we have a permit that we think is in order.
Yeah. Go ahead.
It's Dr. Hunter first and then Mr. Hayashi.
Well, I wanted to go back to the question of land application, and if Mr. Hayashi has a comment following Mr. Press's comment. Oh, wait. So I don't want to drop this line of thinking. Okay. I wanted to get back to the land application because we're talking about public access, but I didn't hear any discussion or mention of potential exposure of farm workers. And I also had another question, so I'll just put them both out at once. There is a requirement in the monitoring program that the land application area have a daily visual monitoring. What does that consist of, and what's the purpose? How does that work?
Well, essentially, they have, I think, two full-time staff that maintain and operate the irrigation system within that disposal area. And what the visual monitoring is supposed to do is verify compliance with provisions of the order with regard to surface water runoff, ponding, overspray that is going to get into either the Salinas River or onto the ag fields that are adjacent, and to just, you know, make sure that it's working as it's intended to do.
So does that concern things like rainy days and windy days? And
absolutely. Okay. There's a prohibition that they can't apply wastewater during storm events, in which, you know, they're not going to get the infiltration that the disposal is designed to do.
And then in terms of potential to farm workers who apparently fall, I think they fall in a different category than access by the public.
Yeah.
So what information do we have on that?
We don't have any information, and that's a good question. And that's one of the reasons we have the prohibition in there about the overspray and the runoff, to make sure they keep that discharge localized into those designated disposal areas.
So what could we do, or how could we provide for better information that characterizes what the nature is of the farm worker presence in proximity to that land?
I'm not sure what your question is getting at.
Well, if
we
don't have any information, right? We have no information, so we don't know. Seasonally, are they in proximity in those in the fields that are adjacent to the disposal area? Do we know that they're actively in there seasonally, and then how many farm workers, and then are they there at the same time that the irrigation is going on? And is that the kind of information that would give us a better picture if there's potential?
Perhaps it would, but I think the question that we should ask first is even if they are there, is there a potential hazard to them being in that area from the irrigation of that water? I think that's kind of the first question. And then look at the proximity of the farmers.
So can we do that? Yeah, can we do that?
Well, I'm not sure how we could do it specifically with this site. I mean, we could do some sort of a literature search and try to figure out. I mean, right now, as long as the sprinkler systems aren't spraying water over towards where the farmers are working, theoretically they're not going to be exposed. However, there is some new cutting-edge research that's involving entrainment of viruses and aerosols and the transport of that that comes into question, but I don't think we necessarily have a concise technical endpoint or study that definitively shows that there's a nexus with spray irrigation of treated domestic wastewater effluent and exposure via aerosols and viruses. That's going to be a difficult one to put our finger on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I guess then in light of that, if we can't really know that, then I think it would be helpful to know how many farm workers are out there, because I think if we are concerned about public access, then we should be concerned about workers who are being exposed to this in whatever fashion. If we find out that, the irrigation is scheduled on days and farm workers are there on different days, I mean, there's all kinds of ways to understand what the interaction is.
I'm sure there's a considerable overlap. I mean, they're irrigating on a daily basis, or they're discharging on a daily basis. I'm sure those agricultural areas are active seasonally, year-round, if not just seasonally. So they're going to be there. And I guess I'm open to suggestions to try to find out how many and when.
Yeah, I just don't understand the distinction. If you say no public access, no public exposure, but we know that there are farm workers in the area. So I think it's something
we should get some information on. I think that Mr. Hayashi may have some answers to those questions.
Thank you.
Do we have somebody here from that operates those spray fields? Is that a hand line or is it a permanent set?
It's permanent.
It's permanent?
Come to the microphone.
Can you come up and identify yourself, please?
Sorry about that. My name is Tom Adcock. I'm the Vice President of California Utility Service. And we also have Ed Alexander, our operator of the plant here. And if there's questions I might not be able to answer, he probably would be able to answer. But, yes, it's a permanent line. It's a PVC line it's 2-inch laterals with, I think, they're 3/4-inch sprinkler heads.
Are they on risers?
They are on risers.
How far off the ground are they?
They're approximately, I'd say, about 3 feet.
About 3 feet
up. The elevation of the spray field, though, the map doesn't show it because it's not three-dimensional, is somewhat lower than the fields, as well as there's a berm that's approximately anywhere from 10 to 15 feet
and
high.
What's the pressure that you discharge the water at?
The pressure is approximately 35 to 40 pounds.
So it's a low-pressure discharge. So the droplets are going to be larger as opposed to, the droplet sizes are going to be larger as opposed to finer. So you're not. I don't think you're going to have a problem with the drift.
It's a rainbird style, so you're right. It's a stream that gets popped and moved so that it's not.
Is there a reason to have a 36-inch riser?
Really, it's just to get it up high enough to where we're covering a certain area of ground. I mean, per sprinkler, we certainly could lower it.
What is the spacing on it? 30 by 40?
About 30 by 30.
I mean, if you could lower it to 12 inches, or do you have vegetation under there?
No, there's not vegetation. We are disking it continuously and ripping to okay. cause the percolation. Although we do have equipment and tractors mm-hmm. going through, so you have to have it high enough to seethe where you're not running them over. But Ed, if you had
a comment on that, we use a challenger to go in there and disk.
Okay. Why don't you come up also that everybody could hear you through the microphone, and please identify yourself.
Ed Alexander, I'm the chief operator for California Utility Service.
Okay.
But to address what you were questioning was, we use a challenger, and we have a set of rippers on it and a set of discs on it, and the height of the sprinklers does allow us to visually see them, so we're not running them over. I mean, occasionally it does happen, mm-hmm. and we do have to.
But you could also flag them too.
Yeah, we could flag as well.
You know, if you keep the lower to the ground that you could get those sprinklers, the less impact you're going to have with any wind or drift.
But I really don't see the wind and the drift being a major issue because it is a large droplet.
Yeah.
To give you a little bit of my background.
Yeah, you're right. I understand that. I'm just speaking generally.
Yeah. I was on the reclamation project design team for the regional wastewater facility in Marina. I was a mid-management level there with them for 23 years. And we did numerous studies out in Castroville for the MRSA project. I don't know if any of you are familiar with the MRSA project. Monterey Wastewater Reclamation Study for Agriculture. And we did some aerosol studies. And the finer the mist, or the finer the droplets, the greater risk of drift. And in this case, we're dealing with a droplet that's probably the size of an eraser head on a pencil. So the chance for drift is pretty remote.
What size nozzle are you using?
I want to say it's a 3/16 nozzle.
That's a big nozzle, yeah.
It's a big nozzle. It's not a small
I don't think anything to worry about, Monica.
And the location of the field, as Tom indicated, is such that the spray field actually sets lower than the surrounding farmland, and there are numerous berms both on the farmland side and on the Salinas River side that would impede any flow of reclaimed water or treated water into the Salinas River and or into any adjacent fields.
I have a quick question. Are the signs bilingual?
The signs are bilingual, yes. We do have signage out there.
Oh, that's good. Also, while you're there, could you also respond to comments that we heard about hikers and others that could be moving through that area and apparently have been seen by others?
Well, I do know for a fact that there are people that do hike down through the Toro Creek, the new park site there that's on the end of, Portola? And the BLM site, and I know that there are hikers that actually hike down to Toro Creek to access the Salinas River. I myself have never seen anyone in our spray field area. There's evidence of traffic adjacent to it because it seems to be a real popular dump site for refrigerators and furniture, but I myself have never seen anyone in the area. We do have gates at the southeastern end where we enter, and we have a gate over on the Davis Road area
here,
and we have
here.
A gate approximately halfway up into the spray field area as well to keep vehicles and such out.
Well, why don't we do this? Why don't we bring this back when we're here?
I have one more question.
Okay.
The only question I have is there was a remark made in discrepancy of the flow.
Yeah, I'd like to address that, too, if I can, if we're done with this discussion.
I think we're done with that discussion.
And I try to address...
I think that's the only thing that would... The only comments. Question is what the flow is.
Historically, I don't know, Chairman Young, you may recall, I think in 2004 you received a letter from the Meyer Group, and it was trying to resolve the flow and the connection issues with the facility. A lot of the neighbors up there were under the impression that the facility was either at or exceeding its capacity. There was uncertainty in the effluent flows that we were getting. And basically, I've got five different data sets of, in various forms of influent flow, effluent flow, and processing flows for that facility, the most recent of which is an inline factory-calibrated mag flow meter that's an influent meter that they had installed, I think, in April 2005. And that's, in my professional opinion, the most accurate of the data that we have for the last year and a half. And that indicates that they are well below their design and permitted average day, 30-day average flow capacity of 300,000 gallons per day. They're currently at about 215,000 gallons per day. With regard to the connections, that's kind of a moot point in my opinion. The flow is what it is. It really doesn't matter how many connections you have. You can make kind of rough calculations of what the flow is based on the number of connections, and you can, you know, I could use the most prevalent and widely used ranges that are published in Metcalf and Eddy, and I can give you two flow numbers, one of which is twice what the other one is if I go to opposite extremes of that flow. So I have very high level of confidence that the flow data that we are now getting is consistent and it's accurate, and it shows that they're below capacity. And if I can move on, unless there's any question on that one, I'll address a couple of the other points that she made regarding the disposal area. Based on the water balances that were submitted by FLOG Water Resources as part of their report of waste discharge application, they indicate that 32 acres is required for the spray irrigation disposal of this effluent. They currently have 38 acres that are actively being utilized, and they have cleared, I think it's an additional, I take that back. I think they're at 50 acres. Yeah, they're currently irrigating at 50 acres, and then they've cleared an additional 24 acres, I believe, and sometime within the next several months, they should probably be plumbing that in and now have a total of about 74 acres of active irrigated land for the disposal. And also with regard to the permit and the flow limitations, I think I'd like to note that this permit, we've relaxed some of the requirements, but overall we've added more requirements. I think that gives it more teeth in us keeping a handle on the fact that the plant is doing what it's designed to do and that it's below its capacity, and that primarily has to do with the influent and effluent BOD and total suspended solids analyses that is now required. If indeed that 300,000 gallon per day design capacity is not accurate, we will know in short order as additional connections are made if they're starting to exceed their hydraulic capacity. The BOD and the TSS numbers are going to start jumping all over the place. And also in anticipation of some of the effluent nitrogen and nitrate monitoring and effluent limitations, Mr. Alexander has already adjusted the sequencing batch reactor systems in the plant such that previously they were achieving an effluent nitrate limit or concentration of about 12 milligrams per liter. In the last several months, he's gotten that down below 2. So it's a pretty good indication that that plant is operating well below its hydraulic capacity, that they're able to do that.
Okay. How does the board feel about bringing this back in July?
I have a couple points, okay. But are you talking about bringing it back for an update or bringing it back to vote on it?
No, I mean to vote on it
now,
but to have just a status after we've seen a quarterly report of some monitoring and maybe Ms. Bacigalupi could then have a written letter into the file that staff would have to respond to as part of the staff report, and then it's easier for us to go through at that point and compare any remaining issues that you still think are on the table, and Mr. Keeling will go through and address those. So that's what I'm thinking we could do. Ms. Oken?
That's okay. I wasn't sure if you were saying we should delay adopting the WDRs, but I did want to make two points. One on the signage. I didn't see the requirement in the WDRs for signage. It sounds like they're already doing it, but if the board wants to add that to the permit, I may have missed it. I was looking through pretty quickly. We can add language. I have some language you can use for the signs or whatever the language already is you're using. It's in there?
I'd basically use the Title 22 language, and I can pull it from.
The other thing is, in terms of the aerial drift to the adjacent ag land, the permit or the WDRs already prohibits wastewater spray, mist, or runoff from entering adjacent agricultural areas. So there's appropriate language in the permit. The issue is making sure that that's being complied with.
Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
If I can say a couple comments here. One, I didn't see any compliance record or violation record in your report, and I look for it specifically. And I appreciate if you would include those in the future.
Yeah. There is a brief statement in there, and I only noted one historical violation that I went back and pulled out of the files. I think it was in 2004, and it had to do with, I think, Scott Phillips's inspection. And at that time, there was some record-keeping discrepancies. You know, I guess couldn't find the daily logs. The lab appeared to have been, you know, unused, unmaintained. Yeah. And then there are some other violations that date back to 1997 regarding the implementation of some infrastructure type issues with regard to biosolids, dewatering and storage and containment. And that has been rectified along with the flow.
But it would have been nice if you had had that in your report.
Yeah, I just felt hard pressed to go back and pull out violations that were over 5-6 years old, going back three operators and beating them over the head with it. But I will keep that in mind.
Well, I don't think it's to beat them over their head, but I think it makes the board aware, because we go through so many of these and we can't keep track of all of them. The other concern, and it has been brought up, is the spray fields. And the spray fields are on the opposite side of the Salinas River, and that's one of the areas that floods first. And it's a lower part of the Salinas River in that particular bend.
Mm-hmm.
There was some, you know, was asked if public can access it. It's not open to the public, but I can tell you there's motorcycles, there's four-wheelers, there's people that just hike through there. It's not fenced off.
Down the riverbed, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah.
And there is some water flowing in the Salinas River most of the time. You could probably jump across it at different periods of the year. But it's not normally accessed from the reservation road. It would be more access from either Highway 68 or Davis, more from the Davis end, because I see that more at the Davis end than anyplace else. Our board attorney asked if there was any municipal wells close. There is not, but there is potable water wells that feed the bluffs within less than a mile of this. And it's not 2 miles from Davis Road. I would expect it's probably a mile to a mile and a half, mm-hmm. the plant. Less than a quarter of a mile from Highway 68. So to look at the spraying action, and my expert, Mr. Hayashi, since he's in the irrigation business, I take his word for that. But this is not tertiary treated water. This is secondary treated water. And that's one of my concerns, that there are ag people working. There is some drift, even with the amount of the size of the water droplets. So I think that we need to make sure that all precautions are taken in that particular area. There are some berms in there that does separate the ag from the Salinas River. Some ag has recovered some of the Salinas River to grow produce on. So I all those things I think are concerns. And of course, one of the questions has always been, is the plant operating correctly? And I think you answered that question. And are they above capacity? And I think you've answered that question correctly. So I would like to see, especially when you come back, if you're going to come back in July, just give us some background on violations and compliance. Give us some history. And I think in the future of any other permits, I'd like to see those.
Sure.
Not to beat but just to have the answers, because the general public saying, well, I know there was a violation. Well, I can't remember. We do so many of these, I can't remember each individual one.
Yeah. If I may, I might just want to address your one concern about access from the actual dry river channel to the irrigation areas. In my walk of the disposal areas, you'd be hard-pressed to cross over from the river channel to the irrigation areas unless you're either, one, a bird, a monkey, a marsupial, or somebody with a machete that had a very serious intent of hacking their way through what appears to me to be 40, 50 feet of very dense riparian vegetation and willows and underbrush.
Well, let me tell you, that area, that wasn't that way all the time. Because as a young man, I used to hunt rabbits and quail and ducks through that whole area from the Highway 68 bridge all the way to Davis Road. And it was permitted that time. It's not permitted to hunt through there now. But at one time, vegetation was cleared out of the Salinas River. Things have changed since then. Yes, I would say that the vegetation is very thick through there.
You mean you hung up your machete?
So I'm quite familiar with that specific area personally.
Matt, my thinking is that, you know, any violations within the permit cycle are appropriate for the board to know about. So, you know, if this had been a five-year permit, no, I wouldn't want you to necessarily tell us about what happened before if everything had been corrected. But this is a 10-year permit right now. And so that whole period of time, I think, is, you know, useful for us to know about.
Understood.
And is Ms. Bacigalupi on the interested persons list?
She is now.
Good.
She wasn't formerly, and I did apologize to her for that.
That happens.
I can't account for the our electronic interested parties list sometimes.
Right.
Okay. Doesn't cooperate very well.
Yes, Mr. Shallcross.
If you do come back in July, and I think that's a good idea,
it'd
be real helpful if you could bring some photos of some of these things, like the berms, the signage, the gates. It helps us get a better picture of what we're talking about.
Hey, we can drive down there in 10 minutes.
I know.
Okay.
Not without
and
notice.
And also, if you could, the river channel, the access that you're describing, it does change, and it depends on the stormy events, but that I'd also like to see that. Thank you.
Okay. We have a recommendation before us, right, Ms. Oaken?
Yes.
Okay.
Do we need any changes for signage? You've already got all that.
Signage is
in there. Okay.
Well, I didn't find it either, and I think you're correct. I may have omitted it. I'll go back and double-check, and if it's not, I will add it in as one of the...
Well, the language in the Title 22 section says, danger, do not drink, and I don't think that's really the signage we want here. So maybe something more along the lines of danger, partially treated, recycled water used for irrigation or something.
Don't
trespass.
Don't mix with your gin and tonic.
There is a statement in the original WDR, the existing 9523, in regards to signage. And I don't recall seeing it either in the new one. Is it? Okay.
Yeah, it's specification B3. John just brought that to my attention on page 15, and I'll read it to you if you like. All wastewater effluent storage reservoirs and land application disposal areas with public access shall be posted in English and Spanish to warn the public domestic wastewater is being stored or applied. So I guess in this case what we'll want to do is kind of remove the with public access part and just say all areas, or at least the disposal areas. There's definitely no question as to the public access at the plant, so I don't necessarily think they need to post signs at the wastewater treatment facility, but
it certainly is appropriate
disposal areas, which is why I put that in there.
Can you tell me where that section is you're reading from again?
Oh, I'm sorry. It's a specification on page 15 of the order, and it's specifications B3.
Very good. Thank you.
Left-hand column.
Okay. Thank you.
On mine.
Okay, Mr. Jeffries.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, I have one more question for Mr. Adcock.
An old version. I'm sorry, page 16. I should keep more up to date on my documents.
Mr. Adcock, are you familiar with the old Salinas dump? And does this spray field encompass part of that?
I'm not familiar with the old Salinas dump.
Your dad probably would be.
Probably. This property, well, when we acquired the plant, a portion, I would say probably about half of the spray field was owned by the facility, the wastewater entity that was there at the time that we acquired in the mid-80s. And then we've acquired more land from farmers, certain farm properties. But
well, the east side of Davis Road, which would be the downside of the map that's up there, well, actually both sides of Davis Road was a Salinas disposable site back in the 50s and the 60s.
Okay.
And I was wondering, and I can't really tell what the dimensions are there, but it proceeded down that side of the riverbank considerably. And I was wondering if that was part of that.
I do not know. I certainly know that during our opening up of the area and putting in irrigation, we certainly come across things, but I don't know if that's from being a dump or if that's from
more than likely
or old floods that have come through there.
Thank you.
Okay. We do have closed session we've got to get into as soon as possible before we move through that time slot. So we need a motion.
I move to adopt the order with the minor signage change that you're going to make.
Okay. A second. All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, motion carries unanimously. And so we'll see some photos then in July of the signage up.
Yeah, I believe we'll also have a Las Palmas discussion in July as well, correct?
Okay, that's fine. Thank you very much. We will convene for lunch. The board is going to go into closed session. Ms. Hogan, do you want to address that?
The closed session that I will be participating in is on the Voices of the Wetlands case on the agenda and also discussion of whether to initiate litigation.
Okay. And then do I need to? Okay. Well, and then Ms. Hogan will be leaving closed session and probably then Dr. Bowker would be and Dr. Hunter would be. The board will be discussing some issues related to Los Osos.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think we need to do Ms. Ogan's second, right? We need to get over there and call the attorneys because this is the time that we had set aside to call the attorneys.
Okay.
So, are we going to do this West Wing?
Yep. Okay. To the West Wing.
Go in the main door.